Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, Aaron Flint, great to be with you here with Montana Talks. We've got John Jackson, the Joker from Twitter, at PVTJokerUS via X.com. John, great to see you. Thanks for sidekicking with me a little bit here today.
Good morning, Aaron. Always fun.
Really excited to have your background with us here today, because this was a couple years ago, back in July of 2022. I actually got to interview a gentleman by the name of John Norris. We met up in Missoula, Montana, but I actually first ran into him at the Safari Club convention down in Las Vegas. This guy was on Joe Rogan's podcast. He wrote a book called Hidden War, How Special Operations Game Wardens Are Reclaiming America's Wildlands from the Drug Cartels. And so got to interview him a couple years ago, and then I saw he was recently on Andy Stump's podcast talking about this very topic once again. So I don't know if you've kind of covered this a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I've done a lot of that work myself. It's very, very dangerous, very, very hard work. We set the all-time record down in Peru, that Peruvian national record for the thousands and thousands of acres that we took down in this one hit. Uncounted tons of marijuana that got taken off. And you're out in the middle of the wild places. Very, very little chance for backup, for anybody to come help you. Should you be injured? Should you be hurt by the traffickers themselves, who have booby traps set everywhere? They're in cover. They can fire at you from cover. You can't even see them. Very dangerous, hard work.
Well, and when we talked with him a couple of years ago, I mean, he was talking about how basically the Mexican drug cartels were running these illicit grow operations out on public lands in California, and they were absolutely destroying the environment. Bad for wildlife, bad for downstream farmland and more. But anyway, I just saw recently he was on Andy Stump's podcast, and they were talking about a big topic that we've been covering here on this show, how the Mexican drug cartels are targeting our reservations here in Montana, and how they're deliberately targeting Native Americans and Native American women in particular. Big topic you and I've been talking a lot about.
Yeah, and since, you know, you go back, what is it, about 10 years now, that marijuana has not become it's become legalized all over the country via state law, it hasn't been a priority for law enforcement. There's much bigger, you know, bigger fish to fry. Now, that has just given pure license to these international criminal cartels to get fully involved in it and to take advantage of large expanses of national forests and wild spaces where nobody's really watching.
Yeah, and well, not only was he on Joe Rogan's podcast, did he author this book called Hidden War, but he lives in Libby, Montana. And we're going to catch up with Lieutenant John Norris here right after our next break. But very interesting, because, and I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say, because I listened to that podcast, and you know, we've obviously talked about how our wide-open southern border is just continuing to funnel in not only Mexican drug cartel operatives, but Chinese organized crime operatives into America as well. But they're here. So what are we going to do about it? That's the point he's making. Stand by. We'll get to Lieutenant John Norris right after this.
Here's News Talk 970 and 103.3 FM KBUL, your home for Fox News, Hannity, Bongino, and Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, let's jump right into it here with retired Lieutenant John Norris. I mentioned, John, I just heard you on Andy Stump's Change Agents podcast talking about the cartels targeting our reservations here in Montana in particular. But talk a little bit about your testimony before Congress. And thanks again for being with us.
Aaron, oh, it's great to hear your voice and good to be on. Thanks for having me. And yeah. I had the opportunity to go to Congress and testify last October in the Natural Resources Committee on Protect Our Borders, Save Our Parks. The congressional groups were looking specifically at, hey, this isn't just a border issue that we're seeing, the flooding of fentanyl, the human trafficking, just the millions and millions of flooding, you know, migration we have across that border right now. But what's happening internally throughout the entire country. And that's really what congressional testimony got. I told our Met story back from ground zero in the Silicon Valley where it all started, of us fighting primarily the weed cartel, Sinaloa, and the EPA banned poisons on this stuff. And like you said in the intro, all the damage they do to water, poisoning streams, destroying environment, habitat, and wildlife, and drinking water. But now really driving the point home to Congress that they are here embedded as polycriminals doing it all. Fentanyl that's killing hundreds of thousands of Americans, the new super meth, the P2P-based methamphetamine that is being distributed all over America by these cartels, human trafficking, child sex trafficking, gun running, and the weed trade is still exploding on the black market. And like John said on his previous lead-in when you guys were talking, is we've regulated cannabis all over the country, but by and large, and I'll take my old home state of California, where I finished my 30-year game warden career in, we did it wrong. We incentivized the black market. We incentivized these cartels to get poisoned cannabis out on the black market and absolutely run legitimate growers underground and out of the business. So we have fueled the fire in that realm, but we have so many more crimes besides weed when we're talking about the cartel threats throughout America.
Yeah, because now we see these illicit grow operations in Maine and rural parts of the New England states, really all across the country, operating under the cover of legalized marijuana. Definitely want to talk about that. But from this standpoint, I know you and Andy Stumpf talked a lot about this topic of how the cartels are targeting Native American reservations, especially here in Montana, in your backyard now. What stood out from your standpoint and from Andy Stumpf, the retired Navy SEAL standpoint as well?
Well, ironically, Andy and I both come from basically the Bay Area, California. He was a coastal guy on the Santa Cruz coastline. I was inland a little bit, and we're about 10 years apart, never ran across each other. And now we fortunately have, and quite a friend, and doing good things on his show, and we're doing a lot of the same. But what we noticed is we come from California. We're in Montana now, and who thinks of cartels being in rural Montana? What the heck are they going to do there? We don't have a good weed growing season. But because these remote tribal areas in northeastern Montana, and in any small community in any small state, they're bringing 20 times the street value price on fentanyl compared to like the city of, say, Silicon Valley, San Jose, or New York, or Chicago. We're talking $100 a pill for a poison fentanyl tablet coming from a dirty lab out of Mexico can be sold at very lucratively in rural Montana. And these tribal nations, obviously, there's a lot of addiction. So the cartels are feeding on the Crow, the Cheyenne, the Blackfeet reservations and tribal groups as just an example, because they can go in and they can create addiction. They can create a very lucrative market of selling this poison death fentanyl. They can take their vehicles. They can take their guns. And that's what they've done. They've left a lot of communities in northeastern Montana addicted, strung out, and basically decimated, and made their profits to continue their lucrative black market enterprises all over the country. And it's absolutely, I mean, beyond inhumane, and it is evil as things can get, because they can do it and hide in plain sight, Aaron. Obviously, we know, living in Montana, how remote that state still is, thankfully, and the reason I'm there now. But you know, with these cartels hiding in plain sight, that's just one example of a state like Montana, but it could be any state. You mentioned Maine. We're looking at Oklahoma on the weed front. We're also looking at the Chinese taking over the black market weed enterprises on the black market side in exchange for the cartels from Mexico doing the fentanyl, doing the methamphetamine. And we know all those precursor chemicals come from China. And something I talked about in Congress in open testimony and had great questions from the bipartisan committee afterwards was the fact that China and Mexico, from the organized crime standpoint, are working together. They are in collusion, and they are working together at the expense of America, the expense of our health, our public safety, and now our environmental resources when it comes to water in these weed farms.
That's right, and they're using our wide-open borders to be able to do so and to infiltrate America. But the question is, what do we do now? And I know we want to get to that with you. About 1 minute before we get to our next break here, John Norris, you painted a good contrast, too, and just showing how, look, whether you're a valedictorian, high school star athlete in Silicon Valley that takes a pill by mistake, or whether you're a kid in, say, Wolf Point, Montana, or even a more remote location, they're all falling victim, or not all, but you get the point here being that it doesn't matter where you're at in America right now, you're falling victim to these Chinese fentanyl operatives and the drug cartels.
We absolutely are. And brother, we have to understand that one pill is instant death. This isn't just you're going to overdose and come back from it unless you have all of those antidotes, the Narcan-based devices. And this is something Andy and I talked about on the show that gets really critical to public safety overall in America, is warning our kids, educating our kids, and attacking this not only from a law enforcement and treating it as a domestic war on eco-terrorism and public safety against these cartels, but educating the masses, our kids, rehab centers, counseling. Knowledge is power, and we just have to get the word out, not only on fentanyl, but all the other cartel crimes we're talking about right now.
All right, Lieutenant John Norris, hold that thought. Quick break here on Montana Talks. Want to get reactions from John Jackson, the Joker from Twitter, a retired federal law enforcement officer here in the house with us as well. He always provides some great insight. So stand by. More to follow right after this.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, yeah, definitely want to get reactions here from John Jackson, the Joker from Twitter. Joins us from time to time on the show, but he's a retired federal drug agent. And so, John, any just kind of reactions, or maybe do you have a question that you'd like to throw here to retired Lieutenant John Norris and just kind of what he's had to say so far as well?
What John's pointing out made me think of the difference. You remember when back after Prohibition, when alcohol was legalized again, it was expensive and it was taxed by the government, but yet you had extreme enforcement on, say, the moonshiners. You know, the government came after the moonshiners and, you know, after years put them out of business, okay? The difference with marijuana is when marijuana became legalized across the country, and you saw it right here in Montana, I'm sure it's the same way in California, even when we just had medical marijuana here, that's when law enforcement, and that's federal and state, threw up their hands and said, okay, marijuana's off the table now. We're not doing anything about it anymore. We don't want any marijuana cases. But we're white as law enforcement. We're like, wait, these people are organized crime. They're not abiding by the law. Not public spoken, 6% of the vote. We don't want to talk about it anymore.
So they allowed the illicit marijuana folks to get off the hook. Like, it's one thing to say, hey, we're not going to go after the legal, legit operations. But there became this hands-off approach against the illicit operations as well. Very
Absolutely.
Interesting. John Norris, your thoughts?
Yeah, John hit it on the head. When we regulated it medicinally or recreationally, everybody on general law enforcement, policymakers said, okay, we're washing our hands of this. We're not going to put our resources into green dope. We're going to go to fentanyl. We're going to go to, you know, meth, that we're going to go to these other drugs, which appropriately they need to, because there's such a massive problem there. But what we continued to push after regulation in California, when the black market started to skyrocket and these cartels continued to escalate, was the environmental damage. You can get massive penalties from water poisoning, from water diversion, from killing wildlife illegally. EPA banned toxic poisons that the Mexican cartels, and now the Chinese have their own set of poisons with Chinese language on them that we're just starting to see here in America, that they're bringing into the indoor grow houses as they continue to take over the weed trade and actually collaborate in exchange for providing those precursor chemicals for fentanyl to the Sinaloa and Jalisco New Generation Mexican cartels. And these poisons are nerve agents that are so deadly, they were banned and they're felonies in America to use for agriculture. EPA determined 20 years ago they're too toxic for any type of legitimate, you know, insecticide use. And that's the stuff that's going on, this weed in this black market that's all over the country that people are ingesting. So when you start adding that, even my friends at the DEA that have been so helpful in starting to see the environmental impacts and not just look at this as a drug crime are now saying, hey, we got to tackle these guys on the cannabis front, whether they're Chinese, Hmong, Mexican, or any combination thereof, with those transnational criminal organization collaborations, and we're going to attack that. And as recently as the last couple of years, there have been massive counter black market marijuana operations all over California and the West Coast, and now it's starting to happen in Michigan, where they're seeing the problem with the Asian cartels. I just spoke to their Michigan State Police just last week, educating those guys on lessons learned from what we're experiencing because they're overwhelmed in it with the same type of regulation structure. So the attention is actually appropriately back on cannabis from the standpoint of environmental damage and these poisons and what it's doing to our wildlife, wildlands, and waterway resources. And understanding, like I said, Aaron, in the last segment, and John, I know you'll bet, I know you relate to this, is these are polycriminals. It's not just a cannabis cartel in Mexico or in China. These guys are like a general contracting team, and, you know, you got one guy doing drywall, one guy's doing electrical, one guy's doing plumbing, one guy's a roofer, but they're the same organization. That's how these organizations are working to make billions of black market dollars at the expense of Americans with fentanyl, with new super meth, with human trafficking, child sex trafficking, gun running, and cannabis has not stopped. And so we need to look at that as everybody's affected to some level, whether they have a weed farm in their backyard, an illegal dispensary, or not. Fentanyl's everywhere, human trafficking's everywhere, and we need to be aware as Americans, educate our kids, and handle this as a domestic national priority, which it is not being handled, in my opinion, and as I testified in Congress, appropriately, we need to focus.
That's right. Well, and John Jackson, to what that point that Lieutenant John Norris was making there, I mean, basically, these aren't just drug cartels that we're battling that are operating on Montana soil right now. They're more like Fortune 500 companies, how massive they are in scale.
Well, yeah, and he's absolutely right. And what happens with these cartels, say these cartels penetrate California or Montana for marijuana, say. Well, they find out real quick that not only is it so lucrative, but nobody ever does anything about it. They can roam free, make their money, go in and out of Mexico or in and out of wherever they want. No one bothers them. So they're like, hey, why are we just messing around with weed? Let's get into heroin and coke and everything else.
John Norris, your thoughts.
John, you're spot on, man. I mean, these guys are basically opportunists. And you know what? They're very good at what they do. They are like, I like that Fortune 500 analogy John just made. They are structured. They're vertically integrated. They have distribution figured out. They have production figured out. They have transportation routes figured out. They're incredibly good at counter-surveillance. I can't tell you how much cat and mouse games we made operationally with the Mexican cartels of, you know, just finding them in those open spaces in California, hiding in plain sight, and how they would create, you know, counter canine tactics to take out our dogs and stab them and kill these dogs that are basically responsible for apprehending these guys, but, you know, costing them millions and millions and millions of dollars when we have an effective raid with apprehensions on, say, a Sinaloa cartel weed farm in California. So, they have the advantage because they're determined, they're deliberate, they have the resources, and they are, as we said before, making not millions, but billions of black market dollars, again, with Middle America as that money laundering segment. We know now, and this just came out working with some of my DEA colleagues, that Sinaloa, Jalisco, New Generation, working with the Chinese now, are able to take the money laundering fees they would normally take of 6% of everything they make that goes into laundering their money to clean it. They're paying literally zero right now collaborating with the Chinese. And the Chinese, in exchange, are giving unlimited precursor chemicals for fentanyl and methamphetamine and bringing military-age male, Chinese males, with clean passports from mainland China to flood our southern border, which has been something that's happened fairly recently, where we're getting thousands and thousands of these military-age Chinese males coming in. And where are they going? They're going in to run these weed farms, right? They're going in to run other crimes, again, in collaboration and sanction with the Mexican side of the organized crime structure. So this thing is getting bigger in America, and very few people are aware. And I'm really glad the three of us have the opportunity to be on today and talk about this like I did on Change Agents. Unfortunately, I will be going back to Congress to testify specifically on the tribal lands impacts. That's coming up.
That's great.
Just to get this on a policy structure, gentlemen, so we can start to attack this thing legislatively and educationally and try to make a dent, and hopefully we see something happen here this November positive for the country to put this as a focus priority.
I'm encouraged to hear that you're going to be taking on that fight as well. And it was actually really cool as I was listening to that Change Agents podcast. I was like, wow, they're talking about this NBC News story about the cartels targeting Native Americans in Montana. NBC News got that story based off of listening to this show. They didn't mention it in their NBC News report, but nonetheless, it's having an impact. Yeah. And now change agents like you and Andy and crew are jumping on this stuff. Let me sneak in a caller here from the Flathead, right down the road from you, where you live in Libby, retired Lieutenant John Norris with us here. We got Frank in the Flathead. Frank, did you have a quick question or comment?
Yeah, hey, just I fought a lot of wildland fire in Northern California, and also as a hand crew superintendent, did a lot of eradication in the Los Padres and that kind of thing. So there's so many ways to go on this, but the one area of concern I have is, and maybe John can comment on it. In 2017 in 16th County, they tried to corrupt the sheriff, and that sheriff had integrity, and he actually turned and went to the feds and state DOJ and worked a sting on those cartels, or not that was done, I think it was cartels at the time, but the point is, Northern California is very similar to Montana. A lot of small counties with one deputy, maybe a sheriff's department with less than 20 deputies, and it's very easy for them to be, I'm not accusing anyone directly, but it's so easy to be corrupted by these people.
To be
even my own agency, our own agency was, through our law enforcement partners, were warned about being targeted and surveilled in our own, staff vehicles and things like that. And so I think that's a big worry. It was a big mistake legalizing marijuana. There's no distinction between all these pot shops here in Flathead County. I've ran into the growers in Northern California who had direct connections with the so-called legal pot shops in Colorado at the time. And so there's no distinction.
This goes back to
supporting Chinese cartels growing and taking over the industry.
Frank, thanks for the call. Well, that goes back to, as well, John Norris. I know your point about, look, we're giving all this money to all these other countries. Proxy wars all over the world was a point you made on this podcast. But yet, we've got a war on our own shores here in America, and we need to support more law enforcement in America in this fight.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I want to say, give Frank a big shout out because he's speaking my language, coming from all the areas I work in California. And now we have another fellow Montana that knows the game. And Frank is spot on. Northern California, Siskiyou County especially, is a perfect example of how you embed in a small town, how you overwhelm a limited amount of law enforcement and community resources to take over black market. And that's really where the Asian cartels are getting the most attention and made their biggest start anywhere in the country was Siskiyou County. And yeah, fortunately, Jeremiah LaRue, who is a very, very cool sheriff up there, youngest sheriff in California, not corruptible, doing great work, telling the story. We're about to go up and do some work with him in the very near future as well for some more exposure. But Frank was spot on. Very easy to corrupt officials. The cartels in general have a ton of money, and they work in chaotic environments. They thrive on chaotic environments, especially south of the border where everybody's poor. Everybody needs resources.
That's right. John Norris, hold that thought. If you can, stand by. I know we got another guest coming up, but if you can, stand by with us through this break, and we'll come back to you for some final thoughts right after this, if you can stay with us.
This is where Montana Talks Ag with Lane Nordlund.
Well, farmers know that input costs continue to climb, and diesel and gas prices also are continuing their price hikes this week. The national average gas price increased last week, climbing 3.1 cents from a week ago to $3.60 a gallon. The national average is up 4.2 cents from a month ago and 5.5 cents per gallon lower than a year ago. The national average diesel price fell 1.2 cents last week and is $4.01 per gallon. That's 16 cents lower than a year ago. According to AAA, gas prices are currently priced at $3.59 a gallon, while diesel is 3 cents higher than the national average, coming in at $4.04 a gallon. And last week, in our local livestock markets, USDA reports for the state's weekly summary that 5.5 to 6 weight steers were priced at $3.12 to $3.24, 6 to 6.5 weights, $2.92 to $3.09. 2 to 4-year-old bred cows were bringing $1,800 to $2,450, with the 5 to 8-year-old bred cows, $1,700 to $1,850. Slaughter cows, anywhere from $91 to $146 a hundredweight. Slaughter bulls in Montana seeing a price of $112 to $169 a hundredweight. I'm Lane Nordlund.
Thank you.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we've got another guest scheduled to join us here in just a couple of minutes here on Montana Talks. I want to sneak in some more phone calls. I'll try to get to at least a couple more callers here before we wrap up the hour and get some more thoughts from John Jackson, the Joker from Twitter here with us as well. But retired Lieutenant John Norris, again, thanks for sticking around with us here for just a couple more minutes for some final thoughts. Two other things that you talked about that stood out to me, talking about the cartels targeting Montana, targeting our reservations, is one, if you want to get the message through to these kids about the threat that fentanyl actually poses to them and the threat of actually just pulling some random pill out of what looks like a legit pill bottle, how they could literally die in an instant from that. It's interesting how you made the point that if you tell them about the threat to their own life, they're like, oh, okay. But you show them the canines that are slaughtered by the cartels. You show them the wildlife that are destroyed and the environment that's destroyed by the cartels. All of a sudden, that seems to open their eyes. That was interesting. The other thing that was interesting was you said, okay, look, We all may despise the fact that our southern border is wide open, but the politicians in Washington, mainly Joe Biden and John Tester, are doing nothing to secure our southern border anytime soon. So these operatives are here. They're going to be here. What are we going to do about it?
Yeah, both really good points, Aaron. And I think the first thing we got to do when it comes to talking to our kids is, you can't just say no to drugs, right? You know, just say no, the 80s campaign. And I can tell you that immediately is going to turn a teenager off. Are they really going to listen? Probably not. But one thing about the cannabis issue, especially with the cartel poison cannabis, when I would give visuals with a lot of PowerPoint pictures that are very graphic, like you said, dead bears, poison mountain lions, stabbed canines, punji pits, dirty, gross, disgusting, toxically tainted water. And then you show, men in combat gear basically defending these farms that they're poisoning in the operation, and then tell them stories of a friend, you know, a young adult that they may or may not know or loosely related to that took one of those poison fentanyl pills and didn't wake up the next morning, right? Or it was ingesting some toxically tainted weed or had an edible and ended up in intensive care. And that's happened to affluent communities right here in my old stomping grounds in the Silicon Valley, where I spent most of my life growing up and doing a game warden career. So education is really the key to this thing. Understanding what the dangers are and giving very visceral examples to really get through to our next generation of how bad this can be and what to do if they do encounter something like that. Andy Stump and I talked about, the controversial subject matter of, do we give our kids actual test kits? Like, they're going to take a pill from an unknown bottle, or they're going to get a pain med pill from a friend, say at a party, or a high school athlete, a fellow athlete, and maybe it came out of a dirty lab. They look like a prescription opioid in a good, legitimate prescription bottle. So it's not like, you know, a dirty cannabis transaction on the black market versus dispensary. This stuff looks pretty sedate. It looks pretty official. So do we have test kits for our kids to test that stuff, or do they just say no unless they know they're going to a legitimate doctor or whatever the case may be? Those are real issues we have to address nationally. And it starts at home. It starts at home, right at the home front. It's starting to see in our schools. We're starting to see signs up everywhere, and even Libby, Montana, where I'm at home, all over the businesses of, hey, be aware of what you're taking. Watch out for these pills. And this is who to call. This is the antidote to have. Actually, the counter Narcan kits to turn that fentanyl deadly effect around instantaneously if that particular device is in place. So something we really got to look at going down the road and just making it that national priority. So we're educating every state. We're educating, you know, every segment. We're working with our tribal nations, because this is a unified front. And one thing I've noticed, Aaron, whether you sit left, you sit right, you're pro-cannabis, anti-cannabis, wherever you sit politically, with all the crazy divisiveness we have, unprecedented levels in our nation right now, when I show these environmentally graphic pictures and tell horror stories of a valedictorian candidate in the Silicon Valley with a knee ache from being on a varsity volleyball team, taking a dirty pill, going into her room that night to do homework, and the next morning she's not waking up to go to school when mom's knocking on her door. That's a true story. That's a relative of a friend that I have right here as an example. This is why the national priority has to be focused on, and this is why we have to talk everybody on a unified front to solve it.
That's right. It's a powerful point you made. John Norris, thanks for your service. Thanks for what you're continuing to do, and we'll have to get you back on the show before you testify before Congress next time again, because I know our listeners are going to want to hear more.
Love to, Aaron. Thanks so much for having me on. And, brother, thanks for all you're doing to help spread the message. I appreciate everything you're doing and look forward to talking again.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, this is why we have a microphone like this, is to get the message out on these important topics. So, John Norris, again, thanks for your time. Let's see, we'll try to get to a few more callers, and I want to get John Jackson's kind of take on this whole great conversation that we just had with John Norris here in just a few minutes as well. But next up, you know, I mentioned we both talked about Andy Stumpf. Have you, John, followed Andy Stumpf's podcast before? Yeah, he's got an interest. You know, there's all sorts of incredible podcasts out there. In fact, Dustin Dierfendorfer from Mountain Tough, the fitness lab in Bozeman, Montana, he's got a cool podcast where he's interviewing, like, you know, the founder of the Spartan race. And so Andy Stumpf is this, he's been on Joe Rogan's podcast a few times too. So kind of that same circle of podcasters there. But, it was cool. We were down at UFC 300, Saturday night, and we got to, because we were there with this great crew from Anthem Snacks, we got to go to the VIP party, and I see the guy with the MKC baseball cap on, the Montana Knife Company, and there's Andy Stumpf standing with him. I was like, "Hey, I was just listening to one of your podcasts right there." So anyway, it was cool, kind of getting to see folks like that down at UFC 300.
The John was talking about a minute ago, what do we do about it? And you said, "What do we do about it?" And I'll tell you this. First and foremost, there has to be political will. There are law enforcement out there, your local, state, and federal agents are out there chomping at the bit to do something about this. But they are told by their bosses, by state prosecutors, by federal prosecutors, every time they try to do something, either flat out no, or they're given so many hoops to jump through, the prosecutors make it impossible to prosecute these cases. The cops are out there ready to do it. You have to have the political will for it to get addressed.
That's right. All right. Well, let's jump back into the phone lines here. And after such a heavy, you know, first a few minutes of the program here, let's wrap up on a kind of a positive, optimistic note here as well. You know, I mentioned one of the coolest parts of the whole UFC 300 weekend was just this incredible crew of veterans and entrepreneurs who I got to travel with down there and go to UFC 300 with. Ryan Rickard is the founder of Fan Up, the president and founder of the Fan Up software. He's in Bozeman joining us now. Ryan, man, are you fully recovered from UFC 300 yet?
You know, I still feel like I need a nap, but yes, I think so. It was what a time. What an incredible time, and incredibly dynamic crew we were down there with.
Well, it's crazy, like, you know, just talking with John Norris, it was like, oh, yeah, hey, there's Andy Stumpf, and there's the guy from the Montana Knife Company. I was literally just listening to that podcast. Tim Kennedy was there. My kids are kind of mad at me that I did not get a photograph with Chris Pratt. Did you see him standing, like, two steps away from us?
I did. I texted my wife. I'm like, hey, what's my favorite show? And she said Alone, because of my buddy Jordan. I said, no, my second. And it was Parks and Rec. I'm like, I'm standing next to Chris Pratt right now. I said the same thing as you. Yeah, that was a wild bunch there.
It was a great time. What did you think of the UFC fight? Had you ever been to a UFC fight in person before?
I had not. I've got four little ones, and so I've been kind of out of the fold for a bit as far as paying attention to the hottest fighters. But I watched on pay-per-view many times, had for a long time. But that was – I knew it was going to be cool, but I did not know it was going to be that level. And just the energy – it was unbelievable. I was trying to explain it to my wife and kids, and it was much cooler experience than I expected. I knew it was going to be great.
Just every reaction from the crowd was so intense. I mean, you could have had your eyes closed the entire time, and you could see what's happening based off of crowd reaction alone, it felt like.
That's right. It, just the roars of that were deafening in all the right ways. It was really neat to see the natural human reaction to every small hit or the ups and downs of it was an emotional roller coaster for the crowd, and it was so cool to experience.
Well, Ron Rickard is one of these cool entrepreneurs that actually John Jackson was with us at the SHOT Show in Las Vegas. And John, remember, it was like a steady stream of Montanans. Yeah. Steady stream of Montanans that were coming to say hi and that we got a chance to talk with. Ryan Rickard's one of those. He's like this serial entrepreneur, business starter, and creator. In fact, if you were at the PBR, the Pro Bull Riding in Billings this past weekend, you might have seen his Fan Up software. We'll explain right after this. Oh.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, I was chatting with John Jackson, the Joker from Twitter, who's sidekicking with us here this morning during the break. He said, so what does their software do? What does this Fan Up software do? Well, let me throw it to Ryan Rickard here, the president and founder of Fan Up. So if I was sitting at the PBR at the Metro over the weekend, how would I interact with your software?
Yeah, so at all the PBR events, there'll be a moment or two where fans are invited in to scan a QR code or text in for their chance to win a Can-Am or a Can-Am prize pack or upgraded seats. And we do 100% of the PBR events for Unleash the Beast and Pendleton Tour, and we have for the last 5 years. So, and we white label it, so it would just look like the event. We're also, with PBR, we're also in about 26 pro teams across the pro leagues right now, but started that right here in Bozeman, and it's one of my favorite things to do on the, very passionate about small business and job creation and, our deep roots here in Montana.
Yeah, John Jackson, that's what's so cool, like being at the SHOT Show, is like, here's a guy from Bozeman, Montana, grew up in, South Dakota, went to MSU, starts this software, starts this app, whatever, right? And then boom, it just takes off. And then he's got an ammo business, and then you've got another company. He's got another company called the Wrap Agency in Bozeman as well. But, like, we've got these incredible entrepreneurs here in Montana. But you go to a place like the SHOT Show, and you see them all just like a steady stream. It's crazy.
And then you had your sign, your big sign that's right here beside us, behind us there at the broadcast booth there at SHOT Show. And you could see – I literally watch people be walking by just – and they see Montana talking. they stop. Hey, I'm from Montana. Hey, let's talk about
– We got some free sunglasses out of that deal. That was great because the guy's like, hey, I'm from Montana. Here you go, sweet. Ryan, man, what would you say, you know, for other potential entrepreneurs out there, young people coming up through the ranks?
You know, I'm on a big kick because I have three of my four kids are sons, and they're so 11 and 9 are my oldest, and I've been talking to them a bunch about this. So, you know, it's basically a modern day version of you can be anything that you want when it comes to profession and providing. But to stay, I'm always talking about look to add value. So I guess in a way I'm always on the hunt historically I've been on the hunt for opportunities in the sense of value creation and just bringing value that I can pair with our baseline foundation of integrity and doing right by people. So I'm teaching the same thing to my kids when I speak to universities or really anyone. I think a lot of people will look at me and just think I'm an alien or so out there in the sense of like I find enjoyment in creating these businesses and this many because I think I've frankly created a handful too many, and although I've had a couple exits, I've had some fantastic failures as well, and so sharing those with people is always fun. But to just like believe in yourself, you know, not to be cliche or cheesy, but to believe in yourself and also to be pursuit of providing value is one of my key things I'm preaching and doing right by people for sure.
Well, that's right. Well, and it was just so cool, too, to get a chance to get to know guys like you and guys like Dustin from Mountain Tough and other guys that were on this UFC 300 trip, how faith is central to what you're doing. In fact, that's part of the Mountain Tough deal that we talked about yesterday, too, is they've actually got a spiritual component to their fitness. And so cool to see, so cool to get to know you guys some more. Ryan Rickert, fan up. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Aaron.
All right. Yeah. Thanks for joining us on the show, John. Let's see. God, man, we're trying to pack so much in here on this Tuesday morning. I know wanted to get some more phone calls. I probably one of these days we need to get John Norris back on for the full hour here again as well. But going back to this UFC 300, coverage and being down there, but also the topic of, the drug cartels and the wide open southern borders. Dana White, there's a profile of the UFC's Dana White. Dana White, Donald Trump, and the rise of cage match politics. And he said something that's interesting, and I think this can apply to business, like Ryan was just talking about. Obviously, it applies to fighting, like literal fighting. But I think just in general, Dana White said in an interview that, basically when it comes to America, that America has become so soft. And I think that's why our country is being taken advantage of across the board right now.
Oh, absolutely. And you fall into that trap of, becoming your grandfather, of saying, these kids today are soft. But it truly is. You are truly at that point to where you don't even say recognize the generations. The next generation below you, you don't even recognize their values and their toughness and their spirit and all that. And what's your other guest there was saying, he was talking about succeeding and that mindset. It reminds me of what Tony Robbins said. He said, you look at a 300 hitter in pro baseball, and probably a Hall of Fame guy, probably he's going to make the Hall of Fame as a 300 hitter. What does that tell you? That 7 times out of 10, that guy failed, right?
but he didn't quit.
But he didn't quit. And Michael Jordan said the same thing. He said, I succeed because I have failed. All those other times that I failed motivated me and taught me to succeed.
Yeah. Man, well, I'll tell you what, man, I wanted to get to some more callers on the phone lines here, but like I say, I tried to pack too much into the show here on this Tuesday. That'll happen. So I'm going to have to leave some open phones time for the program tomorrow. Any other reactions to what John Norris had to say about just the drug cartels, China, everything?
That's the guy right there. Just listen to him talk. That's the guy, one of my six. I can tell you that right now.
That's right. Well, we'll get him back on too, especially before he testifies before Congress. And yeah, again, how cool is it to see that he was doing this whole podcast, nationally focused podcast, and it all started with a conversation we had with the head of the DEA here in Montana, right here on Montana Talks.